Podcast 7 of the Level 5 Podcast. I'm Steve Willoughby along with Eric Reynolds.
Coach, how are we?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good. We're going to be talking about coaching today and how Eric can help you and coach your business. But first, let's give you all the places you can find out more information about Mr. Eric Q. Reynolds. You can go to LVL5Consulting.com. That's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com. Facebook at EQR Coach or LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. I love the Level 5 Podcast because we have an opportunity to talk about leadership. We have the opportunity to talk about coaching, and we're doing this to help businesses. And as we talk about from time to time, strong businesses make a strong region, and strong region makes strong states and country. And really, when we look at what this country needs, more strong businesses and more business mindset throughout. Enough of that. Let's talk with Coach Eric Q. Reynolds. And I love your subjects. I love how you outline this stuff for me. You say coaching and the alphabet soup. And it really is true, though. You can get lost in the alphabet soup.
Yeah.
I tell people on a regular basis here, nobody wants to be to feel silly. And when we talk inside stuff or we talk all this alphabet soup stuff, it makes them feel like they don't know. It makes them feel intimidated a little bit.
Yes.
So I really liked your subject line of coaching in the alphabet soup. But you do have credentials that you've worked very hard for. Let's talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah. So it's the interesting thing about the coaching industry, if you will. And one of the reasons why I wanted to cover that today's podcast is that it's unregulated. It's not a situation where you've got a government organization that is sitting over the industry at large, say like physicians, physical therapists, nurses, and regulating that particular industry. So coaching, coaches in general love that. I don't raise your hand if you're for less government regulation.
Right, right.
As such, we have to police ourselves, so to speak. And there are nonprofit accreditation organizations out there that sort of set the standard. The main one, which is ICF, and we'll talk about that today. So there's a lot of confusion around this topic of coach. So I thought it'd be good to kind of dial into some of the alphabet soup as I put there in the header and break up some of the mythology as well.
Because anybody can call themselves a coach. I've called myself an advertising and marketing coach because I have 30 years, but I have no certification. So I don't know. I may be in trouble for doing that.
Yeah.
But as long as you know that kind of going in, you have it. But for people saying, hey, I'm a coach and certified, and they really don't have that certification, it's dangerous.
It is. Yeah. It's more of a mixed bag. You know, it's a situation where what exactly are you truly sort of rolling your business and your business approach out there as if you're saying you're a coach?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean to be a coach? I think one of the biggest surprises to me, having gone through, the education and the continuing education, is really coaching is not much, is not in many ways similar to what people think it is. And I think that's something worth diving into so that as I talk to or we talk to businesses out there, they understand what it means when they're working with me as a consultant and a coach. Because there's a lot of power in the connectivity of those two. And on any given day, you may like Eric the consultant and hate Eric the coach because he just, mm-hmm. you know, told you like it was.
Right.
And vice versa. You know, you may not be able to stand the consultant because I just said we need to outline, an external sales process like we talked about mm-hmm. last time.
Right. So let's start with the professional coach.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Yeah.
What do they have to have for you to say, okay, yes, that's a professional coach?
Yeah, so there are a number of schools out there for professional coaching. And when you go through those schools, any one of them is going to tell you. For instance, the one I went to is called IPEC, and I actually saved that as kind of the last thing on here. And what they will tell you at the end of that, so it's, that's IPEC. And so that is the schools themselves, sorry, will tell you that once you graduate here, you're a certified professional coach. Okay, by IPEC in this case, right? So you've had so many hours of education, you know, usually 80 some hours in that case, but some are more, some are less, depending upon how you want to pay. And then you've also had a commensurate amount of coaching practice associated with that. And IPEC is a school that launches you into the realm of coaching with enough background education and coaching experience to immediately go try and get accredited with the ACC. I'm sorry, with the ICF. I'll get my own letters messed up here through the process. So, you know, when I graduated, just as an example, with CPC, I'll go through this because I have it down here, you know, my new title now, just to give you an idea of all the letters.
I'm okay? Ready. I'm ready.
Eric Reynolds, CPC, ACC, ELI, MP.
You're like a Vanna White dream.
It is. It's yeah. She's no. Well, now she just has to touch him. You know,
she doesn't nice, have to turn him around.
Doesn't have to
anymore.
Work as hard. Yeah. Her rotator cuff surgeries. I mean,
she's getting up there, but we don't need to go down this road. Let's get back to
all
the coaching.
Right, back to it. Yeah. So I do not generally put those letters behind my name. For the most part, it would just confuse people.
Right.
If I was speaking, I probably would. And, you know, mm-hmm. and as I'm sure you've been in those situations as well. So going right out there into the world as a certified professional coach was what I needed to get myself started in that process. But there is an approach to coaching that we are trained on in that case that is not a sports coaching type approach to things. It's not a, well, Steve, I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you how I'd handle that. You know, it's not that type of scenario. So I thought it would be helpful, you know, if we kind of broke down. When you look at a coach as a whole, their goal is to inspire your creative process and to get you moving past barriers that you have outlined in front of you. So whether I work, as an example, with an organization or whether I work with executives in that organization or both, we're going to take a look at what is the creative process around this place, right? We've talked about the levels of energy. We want to get to five. Six is joy. You know, mm-hmm. six is we can't lose. So mm-hmm. if we're cruising along in that, it's almost as if you get unstoppable at right. that point. But we got to get the organization or the individuals to five. So they're just as excited about the creative process when it goes right as when it goes, remember? Whether it goes right or whether it goes wrong.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Got it.
Right. I got it now. I was going to say
gonna
that,
pause
and then I'm
for
like,
a moment.
Okay, wait a minute. This is too easy. This is
where's,
too easy.
Where's the kill switch on the mic here, Stu?
I apologize for that. I'm with you now. I'm locked in.
Oh, man. I knew we'd have fun with this one. But right. So when you think about my coming in as a coach, as half of what I do, right? The criticality of that is, hey, Eric, my organization's really sucking wind on sales. You know, we're 50% below the number. You know, we need process. We need a path. We need a script. No, you need creativity. I'll keep it family friendly here. Mm-hmm. You need creativity in order to get everyone excited and into that space of like, we have to come up with new ideas. We have to come up with new ways. If they fail, they fail. If we nail it, we nail it. But by God, we've got to get into that mindset. So when I coach an organization, that's one of the things that I'm attempting to drive is to get those creative engines started. Because it happened to me, for many people, we stall. The engine's cut off. We're in glide mode. You know, use whatever analogy you want to use in those cases, we're not fundamentally exercising that muscle. We're following a script in that case, or we're going through the today like we went through yesterday. And so me coming into the company, I'm going to get that going. It's not pom-poms. It's not you guys can nail it. It's not unbridled optimism. That'd be the fastest way to tank a company is unbridled optimism, right? It's
yeah,
it's
everybody loves that.
Right.
So, everybody. Yes. I used to talk about that. I go, what we're doing right now is rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. So we're all excited about it, but I don't think our customers even know
yes.
about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody likes the enthusiasm part, but sometimes, not that we need to be negative or whatever, we just need to look at reality and say, how do we move forward,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, the enthusiasm in the coaching process, the enthusiasm comes when you have either laid out barriers that you've encountered in the past, or set goals that you want to achieve and achieve them. Enthusiasm happens.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop it mm-hmm. at that point. It's infectious, right? And there'll be that one jerk in the workplace that gets to their goals first. And I'd be like, why is Bob so happy today? You know, like, why? Because Bob told me last week that he was going to do the following three things. And guess what? Bob did them all.
Right.
You know? And you told me you were going to do the following three things, and you did one. So why aren't you as excited about the other two that you fail? You know, so it's getting that mindset engineered in a way that's not just bounding smiles and everybody's, you know, running around Oompa Loompa style, right? At the same time, it is a level of awareness on moving forward that coaches bring to the table.
And that's so important, because you can get in these little boxes, and everybody's mm-hmm. going to get together, and some poor dude's going to stand, or dudette is going to stand at the front of the room, and they're going to try to convince everybody that it's not raining when everybody's sitting there getting rained on.
Yes,
and,
yes.
you know, yeah. I've been there too many times where everybody knows this is crazy, but this is what's expected, so we're moving forward.
Yeah.
You can't do that in today's culture and win.
No, no. And you know, when you made the box analogy, the, you know, spoiler alert, those are all of your own making.
Mm-hmm.
And man, do people hate hearing that. However, it is a process of discovery through coaching that you will come to the realization, speaking to you out there, potential customer, you will come to the realization that you have built the trap yourself and you had the key the entire time, right? And so there are just... There are layers upon layers of rationalizations that we tell ourselves on a daily basis, and that's okay. It's called being human.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out there trying to provide for, you know, ourselves, our family, whatever the situation might be. It's generally a noble endeavor in our minds on why we're doing what we're doing, but we, over time, whether quickly or slowly, have constructed the cage. And so that cage is fictitious, and it's also one, as I mentioned, that we can easily kick open if, I shouldn't say easily, but we can kick open if we need to. So that's the part that I so enjoy when I'm coaching folks and they have that breakthrough. You know, they begin to realize those things. And that's very different from anything you get from a consultant. Anything you get from mentors, you know, counselors, therapists, examples. Yeah.
You talked about the cage. Sometimes that cage doesn't even take the customer into consideration. When you start tearing that cage apart,
right.
There's all these things that it's like, wow, we're trying to make our industry happy, not necessarily the customers and serve the customers.
Yeah.
Or we're trying to make, because the boss came up this way or the owner came up this way, this is how it's done. And it's just sometimes BS.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to be able to say that. Let's get back to serving the customer, serving what they need, and
yeah.
and worrying about that. Am I off
yeah,
base
no,
with that?
No, you, as a coach, you know, working with individuals, executives, and organizations, you know, I have to listen. I have to be a very good active listener as part of that process. A great coach is a great active listener. And it's important to get those things on the table. However, there is a North Star, right? And whether that's being set by the organization, say the CEO has goals, right? If we're talking about the cage and we're talking about the frustrations, I will at some point say, please let me know how that relates to the North Star. How does that relate to the goals that your CEO laid out, and is it impacting those goals? The answer is almost always it is. And when you say the customer's not in that cage, the customer usually suffers the collateral damage mm-hmm. from all the cages.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part where it's this realm of everybody constructing these, you know, these boxes, and what's happening in between is you're smashing your customers between those shields, those boxes that you have trapped yourself in.
You're listening to episode 7 of the Level 5 podcast. His name is Eric Reynolds. You can learn more about Eric at LVL5consulting.com. That's LVL5consulting.com. So we've talked about coaching. We've talked about the alphabet soup. We've talked about what coaches are and what they're not. And when you talk about mentors, consultants, counselors, and therapists, that's not a coach. You're not saying you don't need them from time to time,
They're
not a coach that you can rely on, like you were talking about, that's going to be partnering with you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, with a mentor, I could technically say on the consulting side, what I do mentoring as well, mm-hmm. right? And I'm often intrigued by opportunities to come into organizations and mentor a young sales team, you know, for a year or a year and a half that doesn't have the experience. In the corporate world, I've done that in the form of, you know, actually signing on as an employee with the organization. And it's basically a turnaround situation where I'm going to evaluate the existing team. I'm going to hire a new team if necessary, and I'm going to mentor that team to a level of performance. But mentoring is different than coaching. Counseling is different than coaching. And because counselors are licensed counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through a certain set of education like coaches, but they are regulated to be a counselor, therapists more so, right? And one of the basic distinctions that I say to organizations all the time is that the difference between coaching and therapy is that coaching is taking someone from functional to optimal. Therapy is taking someone from dysfunctional to functional. And it's in my code of ethics to refer out to a therapist if I'm working with someone that is dysfunctional, that just cannot, you know, they've got real issues. They're not to be set aside or come on, you know, let's, you know, pull up our bootstraps. Let's get going on this. That there can be blocks there that person's not going to go anywhere without therapy.
Right.
So there, like I said, it's perfectly within my purview to recommend that they speak with a therapist. And I've done so in the past, but the coaching still doesn't stop. That's what's interesting. It doesn't mean I peel off and say, oh, man, no way. You're not coach material, you're therapy material. That individual can begin therapy and still benefit from coaching.
Let's talk to that business out there that's thinking, okay, do I need a coach? Do I not need a coach? Where do I go with this? Because here's what I know. Sales are down. Here's what I know. You know, morale is down, all of those different things. Mm-hmm. And I saw a clip from Dave Ramsey actually earlier today, and it was talking about how do you motivate a team. And, of course, Ramsey, you know, Ramsey's done well for his I love his transparency and all of those things. And he goes, I don't motivate anybody. I hire motivated people, you know. You know, we could tear that statement apart, but that is a good starting spot, right?
Yeah.
But if we're talking, or if there's someone listening right now that is trying to decide, what do I need to do? How do I get this? I mean, I'm in trouble here. This company's in trouble, or at least the sales team is in trouble. How do they break that down and decide if calling you is the right thing to do?
Yeah, well, I'm going to look at that question or that issue that you're talking about with multiple sets of eyes, right? Okay. And I think that is the one aspect of my unique offering that folks can eventually, and this is why I wanted to talk about coaching today, understand how powerful the combination of the coach looking at something or the consultant looking at something or the mentor, right? We've talked in the past. I'll show you the scars on my back on the, you know, as far as actually carrying the bag and or managing the teams within the organizations myself. So having that perspective all around helps me understand how to approach the individual. There are people that I've worked at with in organizations that don't need me to coach them. That's not the issue. I will say that's not the primary thing that they need. They need structure. They need a process. They need to understand what behaviors they need to be executing on every day in order to get to the number that the organization wants to get them to.
Do you find that in that situation that there just may be an all-star Michael Jordan type level of salesman or salesperson, and all of a sudden they're just out there and they just quote-unquote do it? But there's no system involved there. And when that person's on vacation or that person decides to go somewhere else or that person eventually dies, there's nothing behind it to is that a big part of what you're talking about there?
All the time. All the time. I use the – I don't know if someone else has ever come up with this joke, but I always like to think of the analogy as, let's say you and I we're business partners. We've hired the lone Mustang, right? The stallion that we're standing out there on the plateau watching run across at full gallop. And we're like, that is a thing of beauty right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens typically on those plateaus, right? Eventually something gets a little out of sight, the curvature of the earth, whatever you want to put out there. And so when that stallion goes away, we're standing there looking at each other like, okay, what, so we had one,
mm-hmm.
So now who, mm-hmm. Then comes the herd, right? Five or six others trotting behind it in random fashion, looking around for the, so yeah, there's.
And saying, go be like that other person is
right.
Not really coaching.
No,
is
no, why can't you run like the other horse? You know, that's, yeah. That's no, yeah, that's just, and that's the difference between having a process and a set of behavioral expectations for your team or not, because you're always going to have, you're going to find those highly motivated, highly empowered individuals. And by the way, I will share with you, and a lot of times those individuals are moments in time, right? You're finding that person at the right time in their life where they just happen to be motivated. That could be any age, could be any reason, but for whatever reason, they are full stride right now. And so they're off tearing around, but yeah, when they leave, they go on vacation, everybody else just starts looking at each other. And that means they have no process and no behavioral expectations.
Let's talk football for a second.
Yes.
Don't
have to twist my arm on this one.
Denver Broncos mm-hmm. are going to be better next season. I'm not necessarily a fan. I'm not against them, whatever. I mean, I just watch football to watch football, to be very honest with you. Happy the Chiefs won, but it's the only sport I can sit down and watch a game because it's on. I'm not necessarily going to go watch Milwaukee take on San Diego in baseball for that long, right?
Yeah.
So, but they're going to be better, and they're going to be better because they brought a coach in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess I can be wrong. We'll see. But that's really not going out on a limb because he's walking in with those expectations. He's already talked about it. Russell Wilson is not going to be in the corner office with a bigger office than him and away from the team with his own people. He's going to be a part of the team. Is that's really what we're talking about. That's why I love sports analogies. So, because, you know, what happened in Jacksonville when they tried to have a college coach come in there and it was a disaster and they brought in a pro and now it's different, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about, right? Those expectations and those opportunities to bring some sense to the program that this is where we're going and this is what's happening. Because the goals aren't really set in those situations. They want to make the playoffs. They want to improve the record. They want to sell out, all of those things. But still, it has to be coached to get there.
Yes. How many times have we seen the sideline camera shot? Usually comes in maybe like back early from a commercial break, or maybe they didn't quite cut away from the commercial break and when they wanted to. And this young coach has the complete deer in the headlights look on their face, right? They are down, you know, 20-7. There's 3 minutes left. They just have this, I don't know which way to go with the tools that I have type thing, right? So there's absolutely a component of experience there, of education, of, you know, it could have been mentoring that they received from a more, you know, senior coach that they worked under. But to go to that point, there's really two things I'd like to address on that front with that question. One, I'll tell you the story of the wrong answer for coaching, okay? And we've all seen these things in the NFL. We'll stick with that analogy where it feels like the entire planet just said you should do the other thing, and the coach is going to do, instead of A, what the entire world is in agreement on, they're going to do B, right? And they're looking, maybe they're looking at the clipboard, maybe they're flipping through their laminated play sheet, you know, goal line situation, whatever. And so since I have been down here in this area, and I've seen it before, I've ran into individuals at networking events or Chamber of Commerce events, and they've said they're coaches. And someone will come up to them and ask them, you know, so I faced this challenge with this individual within the networking organization. And, you know, one of the requirements is that they're here regularly. And I, you know, I can't believe that they're just not showing up. What should I do in that situation? They're asking the quote unquote coach, right? It's on their business card. First thing out of the coach's mouth. So I would recommend, you've already answered that wrong. As a coach, you've already went down the wrong road there. You know, hit the raspberry sound, wrong answer. If it is a yes or no question that gets asked, well, is that person valuable to the group? You know, yes or no. We don't ask those questions. We ask open-ended questions. So, for example, in that situation, what I love about coaching is I can deliver an extremely profound question to that individual that they really need to think about first before they're actually worried about all the minutia. We get so wrapped up in the minutia. Well, Jane, why does it bother you that that person's not attending? And I mean, you can imagine the sound of the train brakes locking or whatever is it. They are not even thinking that way, right? So what's really happening in that moment that I'm helping them with as a coach is if Bob's the jerk who's not showing up all the time, right? But and Jane is incredibly bothered by that. Jane is letting Bob control how she's showing up in that moment. So who's in control here? It's Bob, not you. You've given your control to Bob,
right,
to dictate how you're now going to react because Bob isn't showing up. And so I can kind of see it in your eyes, but you go down a completely different path to get to why are you upset and why are you yielding your control, your calm, your level five, because Bob's not following the rules. Bob can be dealt with the bylaws. That's an easy answer. It really is. But you have to help that individual get through why it's bothering them so much and then help them get to a point where they can calmly, coolly, execute those bylaws, right? So it happens all the time. And I've seen it two or three times since I've been down here. The answer that these individuals are getting, well, tell me more. What's going on? I don't need to know more. My first question to you would be, Steve, why is that bothering you so much?
Well, you know, needs to be showing up. He said he'd show up.
Yeah. Why? Why does he need to show up?
Because he said he was going to.
And why does that bother you that he said one thing and did another? You know, we go down that road.
Because, damn it, we're a group, and we do what we say we're going to do. It says so on the sign.
Yes. Yeah. Look, if you're a battlefield commander, I'm not going to bother you with that line of questioning, right?
Right.
Because I said so, and we need rifles on the field, you know, that kind of thing. But it's really in our day-to-day lives, if we actually come to an awareness, which, again, I love it when I coach people and they do, they realize how much of their own power and happiness they're giving away to others. It's game-changing for them.
Does that ever happen on social media and things like that too?
Yes. Oh, boy. Social media. Yes.
Let me have a follow-up question. There'll be a lot of people that'll roll their eyes, but that's okay. I've made a career out of having people roll their eyes. Sometimes I believe sales organizations can do that to hit a quote goal in a timely manner. I mean, I've seen sales organizations sell their soul so they can say, we hit May, we hit June, we hit August. You know, now we might have taken billing from other places. We won't get into that, but we hit that. So now I'm good. I'm the manager that got it done and we hit it. And yay. Well, okay. How's your next month looking there, champ?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You just signed yourself up.
Yeah.
But you just basically wrote your own pink slip. It's not a matter of if, it will be a matter of when, because you are making it up, right? And you are covering up the real reasons why you did not make the quarter. And worse, you're in some ways trying to obfuscate them from, you know, hide them from your management team in that case. So, you know, look, we all get in those situations where it's real close, right? And a good sales manager is going to have a few in the back pocket in those situations to know that, look, I need to turn this. We talked about these last time. You know, I learned it. I need to take these ones that you haven't committed and turn them into commits. I need one. Mm-hmm. I need you to flip one of these so we get it in Q2. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. That's an entirely different situation. If you have taken a dumpster fire and you're trying to manipulate it into a nice marble fireplace, that's going to set you up for disaster the next time around.
Yeah, and if you pull it off, you can't keep it going that way. Because sooner or later, somebody's going to sit down and, you know, they're going to realize it's a dumpster
You'll
fire.
You'll be biting everybody's head off around you. It will sap you, you know, because you're... You have this other part of you. You're not a sales manager. That's not all you do. That's not what defines you. But that will begin to spill over into a lot of other things.
His name is Eric Reynolds. You're listening to the Level 5 Consulting. You're listening to Level 5 Podcast, Episode 7. You can find out more about Level 5 and Eric at LVL5Consulting.com. Catch him on Facebook at EQR Coach or at LinkedIn as Eric Q. Reynolds. So we've talked about the professional coach. You talked about the story of the wrong answer. And let's walk down that road just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what you're really talking about is you're letting the drama overtake you. Now, that's from a Galena-educated dude. You're much smarter than me. But really, when it comes right down to it, it's allowing everything outside to impact what you're doing instead of staying focused on. You know, one of the things I talk about here is stay focused on the customer. What's best for the customer within reason, what's best for the customer and what do we need to do? Let's not worry about what the competition's saying. Let's not worry about any of this outside stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's stay focused on that customer. So the wrong answer there, though, really drives them into the drama answers or why is this how I look instead of what's really going on. Am I explaining that right?
Well, there's a lot going on when the wrong answer comes out. one of the things that's going on is, for whatever reason, that person who is acting as the coach in that role feels a need to let you know they know the answer. When you coach, just to do a little bit of a compare and contrast, the right answers or the right questions for you cause you to think in the way that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means and what that's saying underneath all that is, I don't have the answer for you. Coaches, trained coaches, do not give answers. It would be impossible for us to coach. I could coach you as the GM of a radio station. I could coach the head of a commercial interior design location. I could coach the head of a commercial cleaning company, as an example. I don't need to know what they do every day. I don't need to have that domain expertise to be able to challenge them to get their energy up to level five, right? To ask those kind of questions that explore why they think a certain way or why they react a certain way. If you are the one that says, if you're the coach that says, well, here's what I would recommend, or first thing I would do is, then you're not a unicorn, right? You don't know, you're not all knowing in those cases. I guess I shouldn't say unicorns are all knowing, but I think you know what I mean, right? You're not just the perfect rounded individual. And so there's only so far that knowledge goes. Now, if that person said, look, speaking as a consultant for that area, because I have significant experience in that area, or, you know, if I were mentoring you, here's what I would suggest, perfectly appropriate, right? But if you're truly coaching someone, which is, again, coaching is designed to get that energy up, break those creative barriers in those cases, you can't be giving answers. We don't have answers. We help you answer the question yourself.
So I would think that is very important to let people know early on, because yes, you probably have a lot of people coming to you. Perhaps me has been one of them, saying, fix all my problems, coach, and, you know, go from there. And you can't. And even if you could, it's not going to sustain all of those different things. So the onboarding is very important here. How are you being onboarded as a coach, as a mentor, or whatever? And that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah. And you know, an engagement approach where you get both in those situations is one in which I would do a 30-minute coach session with the executive in that case, or the CEO, or whoever. And then the other 30 minutes is spent as the consultant. So we take a look at deals. We take a look at process. And as a consultant in those situations, I'm able to bring in a process that can be followed to get to a certain goal. So in those cases, we've now transitioned out of coaching, where I'm not talking to you as a consultant. You're helping me understand your expertise, your reasons for, you know, feeling that emotion or experiencing what you're experiencing, and helping you get that clear, that those barriers removed to creativity and goals. But there has to also be a pragmatic approach, right? We have to spend time looking at the number. We want to get and exceed the number. So it's usually a mixed approach in that case. And I think, again, that goes back to some of the uniqueness of what I offer.
If you're listening to Eric for the first time on episode 7, I would encourage you to go back to episode 1, find out more about Eric. But let's take a second here. I mean, you haven't been a coach all your life.
Nope.
You haven't, you know, it wasn't a situation that all of a sudden, you know, you're this coach. You have, as you talked about, you have the scars on the back of being in sales, but then leading sales teams and all of those different things. You've got that experience and that expertise. But people need to go through the five levels. They need to have an understanding of what those levels are, so they can really experience it and really understand it. Because once you start going through those levels, you're going to find your team. You're going to find where your team is the majority of the time anyway. And that's what's so important. Again, you can learn more about Eric at LVL5Consulting.com. You can find him on Facebook at EQR Coach, or on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. want to go back to those folks listening and thinking, man, I've got to do something, but I don't know, you know, I don't know if this is the right opportunity for me. It's not a situation, you know, you're going to have some conversations and opportunities for some assessments and that type of thing. Let's take a few minutes and talk about, if somebody called you immediately after hearing this, what road would you take them down, or what are the steps that you would go through to find out if they're the right, if you're right for each other, find out if you could help them, those types of things.
Yeah, I usually put my pricing in front of them and see how they react. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not even sure you can afford to talk to me, buddy. Here's what we're looking
Sorry,
at.
Sorry, I've been wanting to say that for 7 podcasts, so I
got it out of the way. Yeah.
No, and in all seriousness there, so we have a part of my alphabet soup titles that I rattled off earlier, ELI-MP. That stands for Energy Leadership Index Master Practitioner. So IPEC has an assessment that allows us to understand in a general state and in a state of stress how you're kind of cruising through the day as an individual. And so I'm able to leverage that tool in essentially 3 ways. One is I could have you, Steve, take the tool, and then we actually debrief. And it gives me some information on kind of where you are and what that looks like. We can do that tool for your entire organization or your executive team. In other words, everyone can take that assessment, and I can do a group debrief on where that team is coming in at energetically. And the third way is there's a 360 component that I can add on to that, which not only gives you the assessment on sort of your state of energy. Are you a level 5, you know, throughout most of the day, or, but also where you are as rated by your peers on a performance level. So
I'm sure you've had some of those that have just blown people away.
I have. I mean, I have encountered individuals who would say on a 1 to 5, they're a 5, and their peers rate them at a 2.1.
Yeah.
And, you know, not for nothing, that's 5 of your peers that have rated you at a 2.1. So if you're going to mentally and emotionally, this we're in a coaching session now with that individual, right? If you're going to mentally and emotionally just blow through that information, something, we have to go somewhere else, right? I have to work with you to get some level of self-awareness that, you're not even halfway there on the performance by as rated by your peers. And I usually do a sampling of someone they report to, someone that reports to them, if practical, and two or three equivalent peers. Yeah. And so I've had people challenge those. You know, I've had people say, well, I don't see how they're coming up with that. But if...
What's the best response to that? I'm sorry I interrupted you, but what's the best response? Let's say that happened to me. What are you wanting to hear from me?
Well, so the best response you could give me in that situation is that you knew it. Well, you know, I'll say these are good responses.
Okay.
To actually qualify it as the best is somewhat subjective.
Right.
But I would say that you have an awareness that there's been a struggle, and either you're going to be open to coaching because you're dealing with something right now that's got you in that spot, or you are surprised. Some people are genuinely surprised by the information because no one's told them.
Mm-hmm.
No one, in their defense, they have not received that feedback directly, and they want to alter that feedback. So those are two excellent signs in that case. What I was going to say also related to that is, you know, my response on my side that they're generally going to get is that here's the good news, Steve. This is what we're going to work on. You have an opportunity to turn this around. And in 6 months, we're going to run the same assessment again. and we'll have actual quantitative measurements of whether you've progressed, whether you've sort of, in the Sandler sales method, campers, quitters, and climbers, right? Have you camped? Have you climbed? Have you quit? What type of situation are you in there? So I get managers that are concerned, like, boy, if this guy Eric came in here and let that tool loose inside my executive team, I feel like if I had three executives now, I'd have no executives at the end of that process, or maybe one. And it's all hands on deck right now, so I need all three of them, no matter how good they are. No one, if someone, I've never had anyone get those results and that feedback and just quit. I have had people eventually select out because they, over a period of months, are simply realizing that they're not able to take the feedback. They're either in a rut and non-receptive to it. Perhaps they've tried to play along the entire time, waiting for this Eric guy to go away type thing, right? And at some point, that the gas in that tank runs out for individuals. But there's all you in that scenario always giving those individuals an opportunity to improve. I've never had anyone that said, well, that's it, I'm out. You know, that's an insult to me personally, so I'm out of here. I've never had anything like that happen.
So go back to the question that we talked about there, as far as somebody listening and saying, man, we just need all kinds of help. We need to almost blow it up and start all over again. I mean, first of all, you don't have to wait to call Eric when you're ready to blow it up and start all over again.
Let's not get there, but yeah, I understand if you are.
But you've probably had people that, right? That you've had to go in and go, okay, there's just, you know, I've listened and I've asked and we got to do something totally different.
Yeah, there's just a complete mismatch. Usually a situation like that, Steve, happens when there's been a vacuum on sales leadership. Speaking from a sales standpoint, you know, you could have an operational team and maybe the same type of things happening. But when you've got a vacuum at sales leadership, there are just individuals that come into the organization that person hires. And it's literally just to put the finger in the side of the, you know, you plug that hole, you plug that hole, you fill that spot on the line. They're just bodies that are filling the line. They're not being mentored as part of the process. And so when you actually get in there and assess them, it could be a dumpster fire in that case.
So do you agree with me that, I mean, that's a leadership problem though. I mean, leadership has to own that problem that it got this far.
There's only one way it got that way, period. Yeah, that's it. There's no other way with effective leadership that situation can develop.
You know, it seems like we talk about this every single time because I guess probably I've got some people in mind that I'd really like to help. But, you know, sometimes you're dealing with the founder of a business that just busted it for 30 years to get it there, but really there's no systems into it. Or just that mindset that I'm going to bust through this block wall. And they did, you know, they went through it. But as we talked about earlier, you really can't teach that to new folks coming up. Or they're not the founders, or they're not part of the family, or they're not whatever that's going to take that any further. And that's got to be tough situations for people to really look at and say, all right, how do I bring this Eric guy in? Because I know what I did back in the day, and I would just work harder until we were done. But that's not a sales process either, right?
Right. Yeah, it's not. And I think what you bring up is a great point. It's all too common, though, right? It's all too common. And it's understandable why it is. In fact, I had a local business person here tell me, I need another me. That's all I need. I need one more me. No, that's not what you need. To your point, I've labored, let's say I'm the individual that's worked 20, 30 years to build this business up. Sweated every day, you know, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, whatever it is, to get it where it is. We're now slipping in sales. Our numbers are down over the past couple of years. There is this overwhelming temptation to find another me or to find what someone views as the pile of clay that they can shape into another me. Let me recap, 20 to 30 years, right?
Yeah.
And so you are, to say you're putting the cart before the horse would be to put the horse in Missouri and the cart in Tokyo, essentially, right? So you really, and as I've worked with individuals, it's like, how about we teach them how to behave? And I don't mean politely. I mean, how do they, what are the behaviors that they need to execute on, and how do they do that? And how do we help them do that in order to sell? So start small. Start with something that is clearly outlined as a job definition. Give them a set of expectations and a sales process to go with it and see if they can execute. Let them earn and show you that they are able to deliver beyond you emotionally attaching yourself to them and saying, man, I really want this person to, I found him. I found her this time. This she's the one. She's the up and comer. You know, 5 years from now, she'll be running this place. That's, well, you, Steve saw it. My eyes rolled on that one. You know, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to, because when they build their competence and they build their success and achieve their goals, you have every sort of bit of logical right to want to continue to give them more to achieve. And they've proven themselves. And it's not just an emotional endeavor, if that makes sense, that you're going through there.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff because, I mean, again, I believe we can change the world through business, and there's a lot of businesses facing that type of situation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of businesses that their teams are coming in, and they're not really clear on the behavior expectations of what they need to be doing. And if they're clear on what they need to be doing, are they clear on how to do it and how to follow up and those types of things? And that takes a lot of work to get there, but if you don't have that, if you don't have the white lines on the baseball field, you know, where the foul ball is, it's kind of tough to tell, right?
Yeah.
But businesses all the time go out in the pasture and just try to get things done, and they're all over the place.
Yeah, and they achieve some level of success, you know, depending upon the business type that we're discussing here. But when you begin to throw in that dreaded word of scalability, those simplistic, you know, dirt lines in the field won't cut it anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. You talk about tough love, and you've talked about tough love earlier, in this particular episode, but how important is that tough love when you're looking from a coaching point of view?
I don't really like your shirt today, Steve.
I get it.
I'm joking. So we have talked about this before, and I think you would agree on all outward appearances and actually inward, I'm a nice guy.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Nice is one thing. Professional is another. Humorous is a third thing that you might have as characteristics that help a workplace go, right? That help sort of keep the skids greased. If you cannot have the tough love conversation with someone that you work with, no matter how many group attaboys or attagirls or great jobs that you've given that individual, there is a gap there. And you need to think of it as critical to their development as the great job, you exceeded your goals, those types of moments that you celebrate. And tough love doesn't mean you have to be, you know, rude about it. You don't have to be a jerk when you're doing tough love. You're setting expectations. And one of the things that is probably most critical in that paradigm is the phrase that, you know, use all the time, but the aspect of it is really critical. So what? Now what? Right? Let me ask you this question. Do you ever get employees coming into your office ready to back the dump truck up and ask you for solutions on what to do next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm raising my hand. I had hundreds of those, especially early on in my management career. And by God, I was going to show them what they could do. And I put that sport coat on and go out of the office and go with them to a client site or close a deal for them or, you know, do whatever in those circumstances, all completely unhelpful to that individual. So if they got done with that dump truck backing up and put it on your desk and you said, so what, now what? What do we do? You're asking them, what do we do? You are causing them to creatively think, right? You are helping them raise their energy in that moment from level one, which is, I'm a victim, Steve. I had this customer, you know, I grabbed the tiger by the tail with her and she's beat me up on this and beat me up on that and blah, blah, blah. What do I do in this situation? You're taking it away from giving that answer to helping them come up with their own answer. And once they do that, man, the empowerment that begins to grow with that individual.
That is scalable.
Yeah, that is scalable. That's right. That's a great way to, yeah.
And they may not come back in with the dump truck to back up and dump everything on your desk next time. They may come in and say, hey, I think I've got this, right? Or yes. it's a different level of I need help instead of go do it for me.
I'm going to give every manager out there that listens to this podcast a huge warm fuzzy here. Because when you let those people know, those employees that come in there and do the dump truck routine on your desk, know that you will not give them answers. It changes everything in your interactions with them. First might come the frustration. Well, by God, every time I go into Steve, all I get is a question. I get more questions than I get answers out of that situation. So the role of you as a manager is to have and help your team think. And when they begin to come up with the answers, you bless those answers. You're the leader. You say, that is a great idea, John. I agree. Let's go with that one. John, that is a horrible idea. Appreciate you coming up with it. Let's keep thinking on it, but we're not going that direction. That is your role. And by the way, that's all.
Do you go into details with that, though?
Well, you go into details if they want to understand what's wrong with it or why their approach won't work. Right. You may have more perspective, more experience, more wisdom. That's where you leverage those things. But you do not leverage them to think for them. So they learn in that process. And then back to the drawing board, let me know. And in an organization where you're at scale across several departments and several parts of the business, that's all you should be doing as a manager, is approving direction of people underneath you that are reporting to you on what their decisions are.
There's a term, executive-itis, that a lot of small businesses use, and perhaps I grew up in a small business that used it a lot, and it was, you know, managers are really, yeah, they're managers, but they need to be out and doing it, and then when they have time to come back and manage and lead. And I get that. I guess there's times that all hands need to be on deck, but again, that's not scalable down the road. I mean,
no.
You know, I guess in times in baseball, there has been some player coaches, but not in a long time, right? I mean, I guess it's different for somebody that's a leader of a department. They can go do that to some degree. But if you're the sales leader, if you're the sales manager, you need to be doing what you were saying so you can scale this whole thing. Yeah. And if leadership and management is what you do when you have time, you'll never have the time to do the leadership and management.
Yeah, you cannot just simply spread yourself out across 10 sales reps or 3 sales reps. As an example, they're not learning anything in the process. And I think sales is one of the most guilty organizations of this. Is we'll go back to, we'll tie it, put a nice little ribbon on it here, that stallion running across the field. Man, they did a great job. Let's promote them to manager.
Yeah.
They're out of the company in 3 months. Can't stand it. You know, that everything that allowed them to be successful in that role has nothing to do with managing people in those interactions, right? So they'll tend to grab the deals. They'll tend to close the deals themselves. They'll tend to develop that nightmare workforce you mentioned earlier, that if that person leaves, you realize you got a bunch of lemmings running around bumping into each other, making cute little animal noises.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wait a minute, how did this happen with such an incredible performer?
So you see that problem a lot, or seen that problem a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question. And so, you know, quite honestly, your worst seller could be your best sales manager.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's what it is, but it's a different set of capabilities. They need to know how to sell. They need to be familiar with the process. They need to probably a good idea that they were successful at selling, but it doesn't mean you always take the best and pluck them out and put them in the management role.
Just go back to football. I mean, Andy Reid didn't have a great career as a player. You know, I mean, yeah, Tom Brady is probably not going to, I saw today where he was actually looking at ownership. That's one thing, but he's not going to be on the sideline, you know, trying to get people to be Tom Brady. So it is that look that, hey, I can understand this game. I can understand how to coach this game. I may not be the greatest player of the game, but I can still help you.
Yeah. Bill Cowher.
Yeah.
Another example there, right? You can go on down the line. There's a ton of coaches that were in that spot. They were a linebacker where?
Yeah.
What? With
right.
Brown? What?
Right.
You know, but yeah, they put them in the coach position. They're a motivator of humanity.
We're running a little bit long, but we can do that. I've talked with the owner. just one final question. And I don't think it's a fair question, so it'd be a good one to end with. If somebody's thinking, okay, I know I have a problem. I know I have to, I'm not scaling. I know all of this. I'm going to call Eric. What should they expect? You've gone through the steps. I'm not talking about the steps. But sometimes they'd call and say, man, I hope that Eric can, you know, get us going. Think he can get us going this quarter, or is it next quarter, or is it whatever? You know, when's this going to happen? And I know you can't offer any promises there. But on the other end of that, you've also said, hey, if I need to be here for 2 years, I'm not working really with you.
Right.
What is that timeline? Or is there, how would you answer that question?
So it's a great question, and I appreciate you putting me on the spot.
Absolutely.
With this one, Steve.
It's your podcast, buddy.
Can't wait for the mic to shut off, but no.
It's a podcast. You can say it now.
So the way I look at my behaviors, right, when I engage with a client, the first 3 months are an evaluatory period. And if it is a situation where I am with sort of a GM or a CEO of an organization and then an executive team underneath that, and perhaps even a sales team associated with underneath one of those executives, depends, the first 3 months are involved in evaluating and coaching those resources. And as a consultant at that point, because I do not want to do the interminable contract, right? I have always set it up for myself that I need to make some assessments and decisions by the end of those 3 months. And so I'm going off of a combination of my own history and perspective, my abilities as a consultant, my time spent with them as a coach. And I'm going to give the head of that organization, whoever the sponsor is, what I perceive to be sort of the so what, now what, type discussion of, well, Steve, you know, 2 out of 3 that you've got on the sales team, I do not see long-term growth potential for the organization and what they're doing right now. So we've got to take some dramatic steps. And so there's an evaluatory period. The next 3 months are the dramatic steps period. Okay. So we're now at 6 months, but in those second 3 months, we're putting things down in place where if they're not executing, we know we're right. If they are executing, then they are actually progressing towards someone that you want to have in the organization long term. So part of my answer to you is 6 months in, we're going to know we have the team we want. Okay?
Okay.
The next 6 months beyond that is refining the process to a point where you as an organization are comfortable with it, because it's not about what I want. It's about, does this, you know, here's a template. How do we hone and craft this process towards your organization I would expect to see lift in your sales numbers during that third quarter, whenever it is calendar-wise that I'm engaged, and even more so to what I would expect to be delight of my customer in the fourth quarter of that point.
I know you've had, I guess I don't know, I am strongly assuming that you've had those instances where you've said, hey, the Willoughby guy is going to have to go. He's not cutting it, and Willoughby has gone. But I would assume you've had some that the Willoughby's guy got to go, but then you've had some coaching with him and whatever, and maybe he or she turned it around. Is that true?
More so the latter.
Okay.
More so the latter. In fact, the rarest thing is that person has to go.
Okay. The
in order of commonness, as I engage, there's an issue at that 3 month point. We're going to have to do some intensive coaching here, and they begin to turn it around, because they part of that self-awareness journey is it's really eye-opening. When you, again, fundamental first podcast we had, whether you like it or not, the only thing you can control is how you show up in the moment.
Right.
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 So you are in control. So that's the most common situation. Second most common situation is they self-select out. For whatever reason, they quit. Say, I don't want to be a part of this. Kind of saying in many ways, I don't want to grow. I don't want to change. I go do this over there, mm-hmm. whatever it might be. Least common is they end up having to be fired.
It's like the last 17 jobs I've had, the boss is just an idiot.
Yeah, boy, let me think about a commonality here across those 17 jobs. Yeah.
You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast. That was episode 7. Thank you, sir. Good to see you again.
Great.
You can learn more about Level 5 Consulting at LVL5Consulting.com, on Facebook at EQR Coach, or LinkedIn, Eric Q. Reynolds. Again, if this is the first episode or Level 5 podcast you've heard, please go back to our first 6 episodes and listen, especially episode 1, where we talk about the 5 different levels. We will be back with new episodes next week. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Steve.